The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, volunteers, board, or underwriters.
Aloha kakou, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul and Robin, and on today's show, we'll pound taro by hand with a young mahi-ai who's working to restore a sacred cultural site on Kauai's west side, overcome the obstacles that stand in the way of a successful taro harvest, and cover more than just bare soil as we focus on cover cropping. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and More, located in Old Kapaa Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and More features Honda Garden and Lawn Equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Honohola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. HonoholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Aya's Garden, all-natural garden and greenhouse supply. In Kapa'a, down Kukui Street from the Dragon Building. Fertilizers, amendments, soil, seeds, garden and farm organic growing supplies. Open Monday through Saturday. More information at 822-7333 or visit Aya's Garden on Facebook.
Here we are.
Indeed we are.
Back in the garden. Loving it, loving being back, and loving seeing you, Robin.
Yeah, likewise.
Loving seeing you, Mac. And I'm just loving being back in the garden, and we've been doing a lot of propagation, and I'm just loving being in the nursery, that baby, the place for the babies, and just getting reacquainted with all the vegetable varieties as they show their tiny little heads popping out from the media, and doing the thinning and ready to feed them and nurture them, and the dream of the big garden that's coming back into my life. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I know the joy. I know the joy well. It is so beautiful to see those. I call them little zygotes. You know, little new sproutlings. Yeah. And, you know, good on us, because every new plant is just a little bit more fresh air for us all to breathe.
Yes.
So bless the propagators. In the cakey houses.
Blessings, and bless all the friends who help all of these plants flourish, and thanks to the friends over at the Kalihiwai Community Garden and Food Forest who help all our babies survive the hot days and the solar storms that we've been enduring. And speaking of the heavenly bodies, we're going to go to our celestial session and look to the heavenly bodies above for inspiration. We'll start with the Hawaiian moon phase brought to you today. Finally, once again, by the 2014 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, finally found that one again, so we can look to that for the guidance today. It's a Hanalei Watershed Hui publication, multiple years running now, and we're also blending in information from the U.S. Naval Observatory. Today's Hawaiian Moon, Kaloa Kuukahi. This is in the Emmy or diminishing Anahulu, the third week in the Hawaiian moon month. And Kaloa Kuukahi rose over the horizon on Kauai at 1:05 a.m. this morning, reached her transit or highest point in the sky at 7:48 a.m. this morning, and she'll set at 2:29 p.m. this afternoon. So still a chance to see beautiful Kaloa Kuukahi in the sky, depending on your local weather conditions. 33 percent of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated on this day. And I was taught that the moon, that this moon's influence, as well as all of the Hawaiian moon phases, the influence of Kalaua Kukahi will continue after it sets, and will continue to have its influence on plant growth until the next moon rises, and that will be at 1:55 a.m. tomorrow. So just about exactly 50 minutes later than Kalaua Kukahi rose. And we're 1 week away from the new moon. It's going to arrive next Tuesday around 8:15 p.m. Kalaua Kukahi is the first of three moons, named for and sacred to the ocean god Kanaloa. Planting recommendations: Maya banana, ohe, bamboo, ko sugarcane, and vined plants.
Incredible. Well, in the celestial session, biodynamically speaking, we are now officially into transplanting time, which is a great time of year. I'm so excited about the fall garden. Today, the moon is in Gemini, an air sign, making it a good time to work with our flowering plants. And so some of the things, some flowering shrubs I think of, like the beautiful Brugmansias and gardenias and things like this, can be a good time of year to get those beautiful flowering plants in the ground so they've got some nice size on them when they're ready to start blossoming. Thursday and Friday, the moon will be in Cancer, a water sign, making it a good time to plant our leafy plants, and we can start looking at our fall crops, perhaps, or at least some of those summertime favorites, the Asian greens like bok choys, that grow really well in the heat, as it's still pretty hot out there during the day. Saturday through Monday, the moon will enter Leo, a fire sign, making it a good time to work with our fruiting plants. So any of those wonderful fruits that you're thinking about growing, also pretty decent time to get fruit trees going in the ground. And Tuesday next, as we reach the new moon, it will be in Virgo, an earth sign, making it a good time to work with our root plants. So you have a little chance to start getting some of those fall root crops in, which I'm pretty excited about. Another carrot crop, the new Kuroda carrot from the seed bank, has just proven to be such an excellent variety. So many people I know who planted it have had really good crops.
And I'm hoping we have more successful gardeners over on the Big Island and other parts of Hawaii, because I was able to bring seed from there, from the from our efforts at the seed bank, and recently, or I would say coming up really soon, and maybe even on, was it a Monday next? This coming Monday, it's going to be time for root crop. So looking forward to planting some of the new Kuroda seed from your garden, Robin, which I pulled out of the seed bank. So
very cool. And you know, when you mentioned the Big Island, it makes me just think of the lava flowing there, and just want to offer our prayers and blessings to everybody, that everyone stays safe through that process that's happening right now.
Right, the process of making new land, indeed. Many, many blessings to all of you who are standing firm in your place there. As well, wanted to take note of that part of your reading, that Saturday being a good fruit day, and let people know we do have a big food forest work day coming up. So this is at the Kalihiwai Food Forest. And we're going to be doing a big planting, including fruit interplanting in our fruit trees, other fruit trees, and it'll be a very instructive day. We need some really good, active, hands-on people out there. So please consider joining us at the Kalihiwai Food Forest this Saturday, 9 to 4. And there'll be music afterward, a big meal in the middle of the day. And please consider joining us. You can look Kauai Food Forest up on Facebook to get more information.
Super cool.
And right now we are joined by a good friend and somebody who's really inspiring us with his work. And this is Henna Caberto Rocco. He farms taro out in Kekaha. He's pounding taro in the Pa'i'ai style. And he has his vision on an ambitious and much needed conservation project there in Kekaha. and delight to have him on the show with us right now. I'm looking for patching him in, and we'll see if I've got him. Hen, are you with us?
Yeah, hello.
Yeah, brother, how are you?
Nice, buddy.
All right. So for our listeners who would like to know about what you're up to, why don't we start with the Pa'i'ai and explain what that term means and where you're doing it and how people can find you.
All right. Pa'i'ai pretty much translates into hand-pounded eye or food, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We've been pounding taro for the last couple months here. A good friend from Oahu, Daniel Anthony, came down and we did a big workshop, made about 13 boards, and donated a bunch of those boards to our community. And what we're trying to do is just bring back good food and education to our community. Yeah, we're going to be pounding poi today at Kukuila Market.
Great, so this is the market down in the Poipu area, yes?
Yep.
And you've been doing this for a number of weeks now.
Yeah, we kind of just getting started, about 2 months now, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Henna, what time does the market start down there today?
It starts at 3.
3 o'clock.
Yeah, and if you guys miss it, Living Foods is actually going to be picking up some Pa'i'ai from us, so you guys can either pick it up from us or at Living Foods.
Great. So Living Foods, the natural foods market down in Poipu, will be in the refrigerated case having your Pa'i'ai hand-pounded taro. So even if people can't make it during the farmer's market, they'll still be able to get their hands on some of this handcrafted product you're making.
Yeah.
And we want to let people know that the source of your kalo, the taro, at least for now, is our dear friend Chris Kobayashi, along with her partner Dimmy. We had her on the show last week. And so here's an opportunity for people on the south side to sample some of the awesome kalo that's grown with organic methodology. And then imbued with the mana that you put into it, pounding it, which is an amazing process to see. It's a real art form.
Definitely the taro farmers, it all goes back to the taro farmers, yeah, because what Pa'i'ai really demands is the starchiest taro. So with these new, with Pa'i'ai, we're actually bringing back a lot of the old varieties, because what these commercial poi mills are doing is actually using all hybrids and stuff like that. So we're just trying to reintroduce all the different varieties and different flavors to everybody, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the quality of taro that you need is specialized. It needs to be heavy, dense starch, and sometimes that's found best in the traditional Hawaiian varieties. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yeah.
Awesome.
And so is there a particular cooking method that you use to cook the taro to just the right consistency also?
Yeah, what's best is actually to steam it anywhere from, depending on the taro variety, it takes about 2 to 3 hours. Other guys use a pressure cooker, cooks a lot faster for about 45 minutes. But what Uncle Demi was telling me was, you know, the taro, it takes a really, really long time to grow the crop, so why go ahead and use a pressure cooker, you know, cook it slow and cook it nice like that, because it's not fast food, he tells me.
It is the classic slow food.
Yeah.
Long time to grow, take time to prepare, and then don't be in a rush to eat it either.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So in addition to this work, you're also a mahi'ai, you're a planter, you're working out in Kekaha, and you're working on a very special piece of the aina, and I'm hoping that you could share about that, what your experience has been, and the vision that you're holding for that space.
Yeah, so we've been farming in a space called Wai'ava. It's a whole entire Ahupua'a, but we're actually just farming in the valley, about 20 acres under a Hawaiian home lease. A lot of people don't know the original name of the valley because much of our community remembers or knows that place as Poison Valley, because Amfac used to have a big poison house in that valley. So when we mention our farm and the thing we're farming in Wayaba Valley, a lot of the community are like, oh, we don't know where that place is, because they only know Poison Valley. Then we say, oh, Poison Valley, and then they're like, oh, okay, I know where that is. Hmm. But what we're trying to do is kind of restore the cultural mana'o about that place, the cultural significance. Traditionally, the valley was viewed as a wahikapu or a puhonua, because of the heiau that's built inside over there. The name is Hau'ola Heiau. And it was dedicated to King Ola, who was the one in charge of building all the Menehune ditches in Waimea. So what we're trying to do is just restore that mana back to the heiau and kind of flip that mana'o of our community, of viewing it as Poison Valley, and kind of just bringing back the mana of that place.
Mm. Wow, so even the cultural history of that place is so connected to agriculture.
Yeah, and kalo, you know.
Beautiful. So how can people support you in this effort?
You know, it's all about awareness, coming out and checking us out. That always helps out. We always need the Hana Lima, always the hand, you know, to get stuff done. And yeah.
So can people be in touch with you directly?
Yeah, definitely. You can get in touch with me in my email. At wayavahui@gmail.com.
So that's Wayava, Waiawa, Hui, Hui, @gmail.com.
Yep.
This is In the Garden on the Farm with Paul and Robin. We're speaking with Henna, and his business is Kauai Ai, and he's making pahi ai at the Kukui Ula Market, also available at Living Foods down there in Poipu. And the market happens what day of the week?
Every Wednesday at Kukui Ula, and we're at Friday Night Art Walks in Hanapepe too.
Great.
Far out, and you're making pa'iai also on Friday nights?
Yeah.
Super cool.
One more thing I want to mention. I'm excited, Henna, that you're going to be collaborating with the workshop that we have coming up in Waimea. And this is a workshop on exchanging seeds, plants, and cuttings. It's going to be on Monday, October 13th, 5:30 to 7:30 at the Smoky Valley Park Clubhouse in Waimea. And this is in just about a month in advance of the Aloha Aina Festival Seed Exchange, which is happening on Saturday, November 8th. And I just want to thank you so much for inviting us out to your side of the island and being willing to collaborate on sharing the mana'o with the community about how to safely and effectively share these plant materials so that we can get everybody growing this amazing food.
Yeah, definitely. Mahalo nui, Paul.
Right on. So feel free to come on up anytime. I know you come up to Pul Kalo with auntie and uncle, and I just hope that you'll sometime be able to stop by our gardens and share some aloha with us, and otherwise we'll see you down at the market in Kukui Ula.
Okay, mahalo nui, Paul. Yeah, definitely come stop by and hope you malama over there.
All right,
we'll excellent.
Love that.
Have an awesome market day today, brother.
Okay, you guys too. Aloha.
Aloha.
Aloha, Henna. Awesome. And right now we are joined by our next special guest. Once again, returning to the show, we are joined by CTAR Extension Agent Glenn Tevies of Molokai. And Glenn is born and raised in Hawaii. He's been a UH Extension Agent for 33 years on the island of Molokai. He leads a beginner farmer program, trials and develops new vegetable varieties, and grows a wide diversity of kalo cultivars in the dryland style, bananas and vegetables for the local market with his wife Jane, and his boys help out as well. and he's one of the busiest guys I know. So, Glenn, thank you so much for taking time with us once again on The Garden Show.
Oh, thank you. Great to be here.
How you doing?
Great.
Excellent. So the last time you were on with us in June, and we were talking about tomatoes.
Right.
Wondering how your tomatoes came out this summer.
It's so hot over here. We had last week we had like 100-degree weather.
Wow.
It's been a cooker. The plants are just growing so fast. You can't keep up with them. So, you know, when you get these hot weather, it's like, it, to me, it's part of weather, you know, climate change. The plants have to be adapted to these kind of conditions, and some are and some aren't.
Mm-hmm. Such a good reason to be producing our own seed here, huh?
Oh, definitely, and making sure they can handle the heat.
And growing a wide diversity of plants, so at
exactly.
least something's loving it.
Yeah.
So this month we're focusing on kalo. We started out last week, the last couple of weeks focusing in on diversity of varieties, which I'd love to touch in on again with you. And then last week we had Chris Kobayashi on, and she grows in the wetland style.
Yes.
But however, most of our listeners are going to be growing in the mala or dryland style as you do. So great to have your input on success in that format.
Yeah, great. I mean, where do you want me to start?
Wherever you like, you know.
Okay.
You know best.
I think one is, you know, soil well-being and nutrition is the basis of plant health, you know, and this includes crop rotation, constantly building up the soil, especially the organic matter. And, you know, one thing I learned from some of my my teachers, you know, is that the key to disease and insect control is to grow a healthy plant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so how do you grow a healthy plant? And I think when you start looking at soil, we have this misconception that we have really healthy soil in Hawaii. And even areas that have not been in, you know, large production, are some of them are really wiped out. The higher the rainfall, the less the nutrients in the soil.
Yeah. And so we have that in spades here on Kauai.
You do, because you have that high rainfall. So the first thing that's going to be washed out are your bases. So that's like potassium, calcium, magnesium. So those are going to be deficient no matter what. So you have to start zeroing in. I think the first thing I look at is pH. You know, what is the acidity of the soil? And bringing it up. And in our area, calcium and magnesium along with pH are low. So usually I can go in with sand, but I still have to address the magnesium. So what I usually do is I go in with dolomite, which is basically a powdered rock. And it does really good on our soils. So I can build up that, and then I have to look at my nitrogen. In taro, you really want nitrogen that lasts over a long period of time and not a big wad one time. So, you know, we use blood and bone. We use a lot of different combinations. Some guys use fish pieces, whatever it takes to get your nutrients in the ground. So I look at nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, magnesium as the starting point in getting my soil up to par. The phosphorus, rock phosphate, bone again, we have a lot of deer bones over here right now, and everybody's looking at using their deer bone and cooking it a little bit. We're into biochar right now. We got farmers going into natural farming systems in taro. So there's a lot of action going on right now, a lot of new activity. Using limu, and I think we need to move into invasive fish pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
In looking at bringing all these things back into the soil, because the cost of conventional fertilizers is just shooting right through the roof.
Sure,
you almost cannot afford to farm using petroleum-based fertilizers.
Truly.
And the writing is on the wall.
Limu is an interesting one. Is it? Do you find that there's enough washing to shore, or is the consideration to actually be harvesting some of it off the reef?
Washing to shore.
Yeah.
It's a seasonal thing, so you can go in there and get, you know, pretty much everything. We have a lot of invasive as well, like a gorilla ogol. We have limulipoa comes into shore sometimes. Rat foot, wawaiole. So we can grab these things in their season, and a lot of the limu are high in potassium. So that's a key nutrient, and it really affects taro, especially the sweetness of taro, and the taro needs that late in the season.
So I noticed that when the surf starts to come up, the first big waves of the winter time, that's when a lot of the seaweed seems to break off and wash into shore.
Some of them will come at that time. Some will come in the summer. Some will get in the spring, and it changes by species.
And have you found that you can successfully dry that out by, you know, laying it out in the sun and let it dry so you can use it?
I would throw it in fresh.
Just put it all right, but not all. What if you have more than you need to use? Would you dry some of it for future applications?
What we're noticing is if you dry it, a lot of the nutrients will leach out.
I see.
So if you can just get it fresh and throw it on the ground, there's a lot of concern, oh, salt. But, you know, how much salt is that? Mm-hmm. You know, that's, and plants need sodium. That's right. One of the nutrients that they need. So some people are seeing enhanced growth with the sodium.
Mm. And what about the iodine?
Those kind of things are in really short supply. I mean, you need it in very small amounts, but whatever you put in the soil, you're going to take it up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, more is better in terms of nutrients. So those nutrients, you know, you got these micronutrients that we need in real small supplies, and you want to put it in. Mm-hmm. And you really have to look at the crop. Because, if the crop is high in potassium, like bananas or taro for that matter, they need a lot of potassium. Right. If you have soil that is deficient, you cannot expect the plant you're eating to have a lot of nutrients in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that whole connection between what is in the ground and what is in the plant you eat is very important.
Indeed it is. Just to clear, a gray area for me is the soil test that we get from CTAR, it's been explained to me, is that's showing what the available nutrients are.
Yes.
And so the unknown quantity is, okay, the soil test says I have very low potassium. Mm-hmm. But does that actually mean that there's no potassium that can be recovered, or a negligible amount that I must apply it, or maybe there's a way of unlocking that potassium?
Well, I think with a lot of these nutrients, you know, what you're getting from the soil sample is what's available. Okay, so if you go and send some lava rock in and they analyze the lava rock, that is what's available. If you crush the lava rock, that's a whole different animal. Mm. So you know, some of the nutrients are in there. If you break it down or through microbial action it breaks down, it'll become more bioavailable. But the soil samples that are, what's really important is that what is there at that time. And some samples you get from the mainland will actually smash the rock and do analysis and say, oh, this is how much you got. But how much of that is really available to the plant?
Right.
So potassium is whatever's there is there. We're fortunate in Holihua where our parent material has a lot of potassium, so we don't have to put a lot in there. And so the bananas taro grew pretty good. We need to focus on what we're weak in, phosphorus, calcium, and magnesium. Mm-hmm. So we seem to focus on that a lot and try to get those guys up.
So depending on the lava flow on a particular part of an island, it's really going to vary greatly in terms of what minerals are represented?
We have over 140 soil types, okay, and each one is different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can have one farm and you can move to another part of your farm and it will be totally different. So you know, what you're talking about in the lava flows is very true. And it has to do with how fast the lava cooled down, how high the temperature was. Mm-hmm. Because on some of these high-temperature lava flows, everything is going off in the air.
Right.
In the more slower lava flows, not as hot, a lot of the nutrients are retained. So, you know, you got all this mix-up. Then you got rainfall coming in there. You got leaching. You got all these other issues that create soil. And so a lot of times it's real site specific. One area is really good. I have two farm areas in Holihua, and the soil is night and day. Mm-hmm. One area is like really productive. Whatever I put in the ground just goes crazy. And the other area, which is a higher rainfall area, I have to put much more food in the ground in order to grow the same thing.
Is this your farm I'm seeing in this aerial shot you emailed me?
Yeah.
Oh, what a beautiful place.
Yeah, yeah.
And what a bounty of water you have right next door.
Yeah, well, we have a state irrigation system, and they're always fighting over it since, you know, the homesteaders have first rights and everybody else wants the water. So, you know, in farming, you have to keep one eye on your land and the other eye on the water at all times.
Uh-huh. True enough. Want to let listeners know you're listening to In the Garden on the Farm on KKCR, Kauai Community Radio, and we're joined by Glenn Tevies of Molokai. He's a UH Extension agent there. We're talking about successfully growing lots of crops, but specifically taro. And we have established that, like many crops, or all crops really, proper soil management and soil health is the keystone to a healthy crop. Yet, with kalo, taro as an example, even when you do good preparation, there are still a host of pest and disease problems that we could be facing. And I'm wondering if you could give us an introduction to some of the ones that we're almost assured that we'd see at some point or another.
Do we have all day? I think for me the main one is nematodes. Not nematodes, because they're going to attack the root and it's going to affect the uptake of food.
Mm-hmm.
So nematodes, increasing your organic matter, increasing your, let's say manures, if you're using manures, getting the microbes going in there so you have nematode-trapping fungi that can keep it in check. Mm-hmm. That's one angle. The other one is crop rotation, either fallow or growing a nematode-resistant crop, such as sun hemp or cowpeas. And having a crop rotation system is critical. You cannot plant taro on top of taro on top of taro.
Right, right.
You can look at nematode-resistant tomato varieties as part of the rotation. So you need to break cycles. I think a lot of times we create our own problems, and we got to be aware of that. So that's one. Yeah. Another one we have is rose beetles right now going crazy. And part of it is just no water around. They're just looking for water. So they're coming right to the plants and they're starting to eat all the edges and they come out at night. But we've had some success using these night lights, those solar night lights.
Aye.
And you put it out and you actually attach a bowl to that night light right underneath with soap. And the rose beetles will fly to the light, hit the light, and fall in the bowl. And that's one way of kind of controlling it. If the population is low enough, you can actually go out there and pick them off. Mm-hmm. So rose beetles can be a pain, especially if you're selling leaves. In the summertime right now, they're just rampant. I mean, I hear everybody grumbling about rose beetles right now.
Hmm. Interesting how site-specific it is, because we have rose beetles as a huge pest in our gardens, but
yeah.
I guess because they have other things that they prefer, they never bother the kalo.
That's very interesting. You know, if you have corn around or you have eggplants around, I mean, it's like us. You know, what do you rather eat? You know, lau lau, or you want poi with onions and sardines, or, you know, you have your preferences, and these insects have their preference. And sometimes we'll even use those crops as a trap to trap them and keep them off the more important crops that we're trying to protect.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So, and again, funny enough, I was so ready for you to mention a crop disease that you recently published or co-published a paper on, Phytophthora. I thought that would be the number one you mentioned. So.
Well, you know, for us, it's not that bad. I really focus on my calcium, because calcium affects the thickness of the cell wall of the leaf.
Yeah.
And if the cell wall is thin, the disease can penetrate. And, you know, Phytophthora means leaf destroyer. It's probably one of the worst, most devastating taro disease in the world. I mean, I think last year or the year before, it wiped out the taro in West Africa.
Oh.
And in the 90s, it wiped out the taro in Samoa. So, you know, sometimes you have perfect storms, just the perfect weather for weeks on end. And we've had it on Molokai where the entire Hawaiian taro collection got devastated. Mm. And in the perfect storm situation, you really can't do a whole lot. And everything is prevention, making sure your plants are in optimal weather, optimal conditions, even when the weather is not right. And they'll kind of weather the storms and not be as bad. We had some problems this summer, which is kind of strange, you know. But I've noticed that if I keep my calcium way up there, I don't have as much of a problem. The other thing is your plant spacing. If you're growing it in a very protected area, you're going to have more leaf blight than in an area that's a little more windy. So in the wintertime, what I might do is plant them in the wind,
mm-hmm.
and I won't have as much of a problem with leaf blight.
Yes.
But yeah, you're going to have to look at, and I think what happens is we get into this whole production system of trying to put as many plants per acre, and it's not good for the plants. They need their space. They don't want to be killing each other and competing with each other. You know, you give them enough space, you let them grow to its optimal, and you can get around a lot of the problems.
I know that Kahlo has this hydrophobic quality to the leaf,
yes,
where it actually sheds water and it's hard to get something to stick to it. But I'm wondering, because calcium is so important, do people ever foliar apply calcium as a preventative against phycophthora?
I think on a lot of these things, you want to put it in when you plant it. You know, those types of applications have very little impact. I mean, when you're looking at percentage of what you spray on and what gets in the plant, some of those things are, I question the labor cost and the actual effectiveness. Mm-hmm. I would rather make sure the roots are healthy, mm-hmm, and you got enough calcium and the plant will take it up. And what's interesting about calcium is the new roots take up the calcium. And after the roots get old, they have a real hard time taking up calcium.
Hmm.
So some of that, you know, it's prevention. It's putting them in the beginning when you first get them started.
Right. We're speaking with Glenn Tevis from Molokai. He's a UH Extension agent there. He has decades of experience and generations of experience growing Kahlo. And we're talking about overcoming pest and disease problems, as well as just having a healthy crop based on good management practices.
Yeah.
And Glenn, I have a question for you, because I have a very small taro crop. It's my first crop, and I harvested a couple of the makuas over the weekend, and one of them had, it looked real nice from the outside, but once I looked in the bottom, the whole inside been looked like it was eaten out by something. It wasn't mushy,
yeah,
or, but I couldn't tell if it was the sow bugs. There was kind of a ridiculous amount of sow bugs in there.
Yeah.
But I wondered, I know it's hard to diagnose when you can't see something with such a crappy description, but
it's couple things. One is, if the plants were really mature, you can have some rot, and then you have secondary things coming in, and the sow bugs are usually secondary. Gonna have stuff like slugs or rats, you know, those kind of things that'll come in before them. So I would look at that. Slugs can really devastate taro. If
snails as well.
Snails as well.
Okay, that could be it. There's a number of those. But what was interesting is all the ohal, the cakey around, seemed fine. They were totally unaffected. It was just that middle one.
Well, you know, when I'm hungry, I know where to head.
Yeah.
You know,
can't
I gotta
blame
go
them.
After the mature stuff. I gotta go after the sweet stuff, and that's the makua. And so, yeah, it's hard to just determine based on what they attack. But if the makua is really mature or almost over mature, you're gonna have problems with rot, with corn breakdown, and that'll kind of open the door to everything. But slugs and snails are like, you know, primary holes. They'll come in and just start having a party, having a luau on that guy.
For sure. Well, I am also interested, I haven't seen them in my taro patch yet, but I've heard story of the taro plant hopper, and I wondered if you might be able to talk to us about that.
Oh, boy. Okay. There's a egg-sucking bug that actually sucks up the leaf hopper. And under ideal conditions for the leaf hopper, they'll start sucking on the leaves and sucking on the stems, and the plant will kind of have a wilting stance to it. The leaves will start bending over, and the plant will become brittle. And when you touch the leaves, it'll just snap off like a crack.
Mm.
And that's under severe infestation of the taro leaf hopper, the plant hopper. And they'll basically... the egg-sucking bug will actually stick its proboscis, I guess it's proboscis, and they'll suck the eggs out. They'll eat the eggs. But what happens is the weather is such where the parasite drops back, and then the plant hopper just explodes. And we had that problem early last summer. And I had to keep on. The guy said, what should I do? What should I do? I said, you got to wait. You know, they're going to go in and spray and doing all kinds of stuff. And I said, if you go in there and spray, and the egg-sucking bug is there, you're going to knock out the egg-sucking bug, and then you're going to have a worse situation.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to kind of step back and see what's going to happen. And you have environmental issues. Sometimes it's really windy that the egg sucking bug can't get in there, and it's just they're getting blown around. You have other issues, but you just have to watch, and you got to watch for this. I want to say it's a myriad. I forgot the name of that guy, but it's a little bug that actually goes in there and sucks the eggs out and wipes them out, and they'll control them most of the time. And when you don't, when they don't control them, that's when you see them, the leafhopper, the plant hopper flare up.
Mm-hmm. And one thing we haven't discussed as well, okay, good technique, but back to varieties.
Holy mackerel.
And okay, you do a lot of work with the different varieties, both traditional and hybrids.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned varieties because, before I forget, I wanted to mention two things. One is that there's a Queen's Challenge Tarot Contest on Kauai, December 7th. And this is honoring Queen Emma, the wife of Kamehameha IV, who was a very knowledgeable tarot grower. And so the contest is open to Hawaiian tarot varieties grown on Kauai. And for more information, they should contact the Waipa Foundation at 826-9969. It's a little early, but if you haven't planted your kalo yet, you're too late. and I want to mention that. The other thing I wanted to mention is our tarot field day. Our annual tarot field day is this coming Saturday, October 4th, from 8:30 to 3 p.m. All the flights to the island are sold out, and so are the cars, because Navahini or Kekai canoe race is also on Sunday.
Oh, gosh.
But we'll be giving away varieties. I think we have about 60-plus Hawaiian varieties. But Hawaiian varieties, oh, man, you know, that's a hard one. Jerry Konanui, you know, somebody asked him, what is the best variety? And he said, the one right in the bowl in front of you. And, you know, it comes down to favorites. It comes down to what you were raised on. In Hualihua, the people really like Manaulu because they were raised on Manaulu, so we eat that as table taro. And it changes based on supply and demand, but it really comes down to finding the taro that's well-adapted to your area. A lot of people are growing Manaulu, and I can understand it has a really nice sweetness. It has a high yield, but it doesn't last a long time in the ground. So when it's ready, you better take it out. You have other varieties that may last a little longer, such as Moi or Pololu, more of a whitish taro, gray kind of taro, that does good in, and you can hold it, like, say, 6 months. So from the standpoint of food security, I would probably grow Moi or Pololu, so I always have it around. On Molokai, we have very hot drought-like conditions, so we like to grow mana and pico varieties. So the mana are the branching types, mana keokeo, one of the best for making kulolo. They can get fairly large. It's a whitish taro. Then you have the pico varieties that usually like cold water. They used to be a real favorite before, not as much now, but we grow pico varieties, pico kea, pico lehua, pe. My favorite is Pico Ula Ula because it gets very large.
And you grow those just fine in a dryland setting as well?
Yes, it grows really well. In fact, 2 years ago, I won the Queen's Challenge in Honolulu with Pico Ula Ula.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had about... Well, it's so funny because I harvested an 8-pounder, and then a week after, I found a 15-pounder. So, but that was enough to win already.
You
so
won with the 8, but then you found a 15.
Yeah, the week after the contest. Oh, nice. But that was enough to win, you know, so I got $500, which was really great.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, varieties come down to, you know, what's your favorite. I know in the past, Kai'i was a... some of the Kai'i varieties were very well... accepted. They're really tasty. They make a lot of poi for the poundage of poi. It has a high poi yield.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of kai'i used to be grown on Kauai. So kai'i kea, kai'i ala, kai'i uliuli, those do really well. And you have varieties that are named for parts of Kauai, such as kalalau, hanamaulu, and other varieties that were grown. I think hapu'u. I remember talking to Uncle Tommy from Hyena, and he was telling me some of the varieties that they used to grow up there. So it's we've gotten into a more of a market-focused taro production now, so we're just growing a few varieties. But there's so many varieties, and they all have slightly different tastes and are adapted to different climatic conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Glenn, that was a question I had for you. Is I'm sure that most of our listeners are probably more backyardia types, and wondered if you could recommend a variety or two for the small time grower. You know, a dryland variety that could take sort of a myriad of different kinds of climactic conditions and still perform pretty well. Is there one that stands out in your mind?
I think it really comes down to availability of planting material.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the first thing, whatever you can get. Sometimes you can't get a lot of stuff. We had one farmer on Molokai, he really liked Ele'ele Niawea, and he started with four plants, and he ended up after 4 years with 40 acres of that plant.
Wow.
So, you know, it really comes down to what you want to grow and if you're willing to start just propagating varieties that you like. So it's kind of personal preference. I like Mana. I like Pico because we grow it. We've eaten a lot. Down the south side, you got Lehua Maoli, which is probably one of the best tasting taro you can find, down in Waimea Valley, and Jana and guys, you know, growing that variety. You have Lili Molina, which was recently discovered in South Kauai, which is an ancient variety, which is white and kind of a purple center to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's endless. I mean,
it's on and on, huh?
It's endless. I mean, again, it comes down to, you know, what is the best poi? That's the one right in front of you.
Mm. Well, as far as the varieties go, exciting that through the Hawaii Public Seed Initiative, we had one of our collaborators when we met last month, Ilana Stout, and she's working on a mapping program for developing new growing zones that are specific to Hawaii's unique conditions, and then gathering information about which varieties grow well for people in different areas. So it'll be, while that's prototyped right now, it'll be great resource in the future, and also for trying to unravel some of these the mysteries of which varieties of kalo would do well in certain places.
Well, I think you can look at a lot of the historical stuff. You know, you can look at Handy, Hawaiian Planter. You can see some stuff that were grown in certain valleys. Okay, I was able to talk to, I'm trying to remember this man's name, but he was the one involved in that publication on the taro varieties. And
Bulletin 84, is it?
Huh?
Is it that the bulletin?
Yeah, the bulletin.
Yeah.
So I was able to meet with him, and actually that's my boss's grandfather. That's Carl Evanson's grandfather.
Wow.
And I would ask him, like, what grew in this valley? And he said, okay, Halawa Valley on Molokai was all pico varieties. They had a lot of different pico. And Kanapali was all pico varieties. You know, and then you got areas like Waipio Valley, where you have a PE, you have pico Uawa. You know, you have certain varieties that they've got really accustomed to. In Kianai, you have Moi, which is a really good taro. You have Waihole, where they grow Moi as well. And then you have some new plantings where they're trying to figure out what to grow, like up in Heiau. And they're dealing with salt intrusion and other things, and they're trying to find which varieties grow good over there.
Wow, Glenn, you're just such a wealth of information. I wish we had all day to be speaking with you. And for our listeners, we're talking with Glenn Tevis, our fabulous Molokai Extension agent, and we're so stoked to get to talk to you about taro. We do want to shift gears with you a little bit and just get into our Secrets of the Soil Builders segment, where today we wanted to talk to you a little bit about crop rotation.
Okay.
So just switching gears a little bit, and I know you have the Molokai Seed Company over there near you growing the Crotalaria and I believe Sudan grass, or is it the vetiver grass?
Vetiver. Yeah.
And so we wanted to know about your strategies for intercropping or cover cropping, rather, and crop rotation, if you could give us a little bit of details on what works for you.
Yeah, well, I think sun hemp is really good. You want to be able to have it as part of your system. The crop rotation is something that takes a lot of thought. You know, because you're dealing with market considerations, you're dealing with the soil, you're dealing with climate, you're dealing with all these sequences of crops that you want to be able to grow. So the key is, one, is building up different segments of the soil, like the surface versus deep down, you know. And you got things like alfalfa that you can actually, you know, do more deep excavating of the soil. You have, I'm trying to think of some other ones, but I think the two most important ones we've looked at on Molokai, and we've done a lot of work with cover crops, would be cowpeas and sun hemp. They seem to work the best. Mm-hmm. We've done some work on sorghum Sudan grass, and that's also nematode resistant. You can get a lot of biomass out of that plant and start using it to build up organic matter. We have some farmers that actually look at chop and blow, where they grow the sun hemp. They grow the, you can do sun hemp, but the sorghum Sudan, they'll grow it between the rows, and then they mow it and blow it into the row.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you want to look at easy ways of moving nutrients around without having to fill up trucks and trailers and moving it all over the place.
No doubt about it. You know, I'm curious about Sudan grass. It's actually one that I've avoided in my small system because I was afraid that even after tilling it up or chopping it down that it wouldn't die back and it would wind up being a problem for me, like guinea grass, for instance.
Well, that's night and day. I mean, okay. Guinea grass is no equal. I mean, we fight that guy with chainsaws and everything.
Tell me about it.
I have a sawzall that I use to cut that guy out. You know, and so in certain areas we have high rainfall, it might be a problem. I don't consider it invasive. We grow varieties that have sterile seed or those that require a long day length in order to produce seed. So like be a day length beyond our 13-day maximum day length.
Right, right.
So we can grow those kind of things. But the other plus to that plant is that you can do ratoons. You can grow it up and cut it. So we'll use it as windbreaks, and then we'll cut it, and then we'll blow it into the field. And then we can grow that over a couple of years before it gets kind of ratty. So that kind of is like, and then we can use it for animal feed too.
Right.
So when we short in the summer, we'll go in, we'll cut that guy and feed it to the cows and stuff like that. So you have these multiple purpose type plants that you can, you know, do. So those, to me, the reason why I would take that three is because of our soil, and we have a really bad root knot nematode called Amyloidogyne javanica, and that guy drinks chemicals for breakfast, and so we need you know, just kind of break its cycle, you know, knock it back, don't feed it, don't allow it to proliferate. And the only way you can do it is either organic matter or crop rotation with resistant varieties.
Sure. And so with the Crotalaria, are you strictly growing the Tropic Sun variety?
I think the Tropic Sun does better. There's some that come out of Africa. There were some that were coming out of South America at one time. The Tropic Sun was actually developed on Molokai. So it had extensive testing on this island. Probably the best thing you can do if you wanted to grow seed is to grow it during the rainy season and allowing it to seed and then harvesting it, so you're not putting a lot of inputs in. In order to grow good sun hemp, they need phosphorus, so you got to make sure you got to feed them something. It's not a freebie.
I gotcha. You answered my question. I was next going to ask you about timing.
Okay. But if you're going to do it for crop rotation, I'll do it in the summertime. Let it grow real fast, and then you get so much flowering, and you go in and chop it. Mm-hmm. It's not a real heavy biomass plant, but it does the job in terms of breaking the nematode life cycle.
Right. Well, Glenn, sadly, we've run out of time once again, but it's been a real pleasure to spend part of the hour with you. Thank you so much. Thanks for bringing to our attention all these great techniques, varieties, as well some great opportunities for us to take part. Certainly, if you're on Molokai, heading out to the Taro Field Day is at least possible for you. I wish more people statewide could make it out there, because I had the great fortune of going out to your fields, and just amazing the quality of kala that you guys are stewarding there out at your research station.
Well, thanks. I really enjoyed talking to you folks today.
Just amazing. And as well, the Queen's Challenge, I'm wondering if you're striking the fear in any growers here that you may be popping a plane in December over to Kauai with one of your 15-pounders.
They're watching me. I'm banned from the contest.
Oh.
Everybody's watching. I think Chris and Penny, and so I'm not going to be going there. And
you don't want to spoil everybody's weekend, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, hopefully you'll be one of the judges.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I think it's a great contest. It gets people out, gets tarot growers talking to each other. Probably the most important part of the whole thing.
Well, admittedly, I put some in the ground in January for the specific purpose of the Queen's Challenge in December. So wish me luck.
I will.
Glenn, thank you so much.
Okay, you guys take care.
Talk to you soon.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. This is In the Garden on the Farm. We have just a few moments for a couple of announcements. We do have some classes coming up at KCC. There's a aquaponics class and some beekeeping classes. And given the shortness of time, I'm just going to direct you to the KCC OSET page, which is the Office of Continuing Education and Training. We also have a third Saturday work party up at the Kalihiwai Food Forest this Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. and lots of food fun and ohana there, so come on out and join us. And let's see, is there anybody else? We've got seed exchanges coming up, workshops. You will hear about them in more detail next week. And I think that'll get us done. Robin.
This has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Robin and Paul. And we'd like to thank our guests on the show today. Henna, thank you so much. You can reach out to him at yavahui@gmail.com. And also Glenn Tevis from Molokai. Paul, do you happen to have his contact if people are interested?
Tevis, T-E-V-E-S, at hawaii.edu.
Excellent. So we'll ask you to please tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha.
Aloha.